Welcome to Mind the Skills Gap, where we explore the barriers to skills transfer and how you can overcome them, flavoured with a sprinkle of neuroscience. In this episode, I ask Ina Weinbar-Heidel about the holy grail of learning transfer, the easy tools that create the magic, and why learning transfer isn't rocket science, though you might need a bit of neuroscience. I'm Stella Collins, an evangelist for the neuroscience of learning and co-founder and chief learning officer at Stella Labs. Watch out, Skills Gap. We're coming for you. Hello. Welcome back to the Stella Labs podcast. I'm Stella Collins, chief learning officer at Stella Labs. And today I'm delighted to have with me Ina Weinbar-Heidel of the Institute of Transfer Effectiveness. Ina is CEO of the Institute of Transfer Effectiveness in Austria, and she's dedicated her professional career to understanding and improving the interface between transfer research and transfer practice. In her roles as a scientist, speaker, consultant, and trainer, and CEO, she works relentlessly to make scientific findings applicable in practice. She's a member of our research advisory board at Stella Labs, and we really enjoy working with Ina because she's so full of enthusiasm, fantastic ideas, and incredibly practical ideas for making sure that learning really happens at work. So welcome, Ina. It's lovely to have you here.
Stella, thank you so much. That was a wonderful introduction. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to get started on the conversation, Ina. I'm going to ask some sort of general questions, and then, you know, let's just enjoy that conversation and that shared passion we have for making sure that training really sticks and has an impact at work. I think that's probably our strongest connection point, I would say.
Definitely. So this passion is definitely something that I've seen in you as well and your partners.
So perhaps I think it would probably help other people, Ina, if you would just give us a very short sort of introduction at a high level to the transfer levers and, you know, your thinking and your research about them.
Thank you. So sure. For me, it all started with a very personal and a very practical problem. I was working at an Austrian business school where I was designing customized MBA programs for leadership development programs. And yeah, I was happy because those programs were fully booked, and my boss was happy as well because they sold well. But then, and I guess that's maybe a question that every L&D manager asks him or herself at one point or another, this is the question of, okay, how effective are my programs? Are we really making kind of a difference? Are we really changing people's behavior in the long run? And in the end, this is a question of meaning, of the meaning, of the sense, of the usefulness of our work. And I couldn't get rid of this question anymore. And so I started to do some research, and I was kind of shocked to find out about the evaluation results of Robert Brinkerhoff and Kirkpatrick and all the other great researchers who tell us that only 10 to 20% of what people learn in traditional training programs actually gets applied in everyday work life. And that was really kind of depressing. And I was quite idealistic at that time, and I thought, okay, I finally found a research topic that really fascinates me, so why not find kind of the holy grail of transfer research, kind of find out what it really takes to make training work. And it quite soon turned out that I'm not the only one who is interested in this question, because transfer researchers have been dealing with it for about 120 years and their results are really astonishing. But they have a problem. Transfer researchers have, and this is quite paradoxical, have a transfer problem themselves. So they claim that practitioners are not making use of their findings. And that is not much of a surprise because, as you know, a lot of research is not that easy to read, is not that easy to apply. And this was exactly what we wanted to bring in, this whole transfer research area, this bridge between transfer research and transfer practice. So how, with with which easy tools can we help practitioners, L&D practitioners, training facilitators to really make training work. That was maybe the whole idea behind this thing. And then we came up with the 12 levers of transfer effectiveness, which is kind of the quintessence of transfer research. 12 easy levers, 12 easy factors that we need to focus on, because we know if we change those levers a bit, then we can really increase the effectiveness of our training programs.
And I think it's fascinating that you say 12 easy levers, because I think a lot of organizations think that this is going to be hard. And actually, it really isn't. It just needs that shift in mindset, that shift in small levels of activity sometimes. I mean, sometimes it can be big levels, but it really is small levels. I was to a conference last week and I was surprised how many people were still delivering content with no thought about actually how are we really going to make that change into behavioral change at work.
Exactly. And that is exactly what we have seen when we cooperated with you, when you participated in our program, that you already do so much in terms of making transfer happen. It's there are huge tools, there are small tools, everyone can start. Even if you're just a training facilitator somewhere far away from the company, you can start with really small steps that have a huge impact. And I think what the 12 levers can do is to do it in a more systematic way. So advanced companies like yours do so much already in terms of making transfer happen. And with the help of the 12 levers, you may find the last blind spots, the last little missing parts, which you can fill up to kind of create this whole transfer effective picture.
And one of the things I really like about the way you do it, Ina, is that you split it actually into sort of three areas, because that makes it, you know, cognitively it's much easier to remember three things than 12, and then to remember perhaps four things within three things. So perhaps you can give us a high level oversight as to, you know, who needs to get involved, which is kind of how you do that split. And then give us an overview of the specific levers.
So there are three areas which are important to make transfer happen. So the one are the participants, the trainees. Of course, we need them on board. They need to be motivated, self-efficacy, volition. So these are the things we need to focus on here, and we are all quite aware of that. The second area is the training design, which is kind of our home zone as L&D professionals and training facilitators. So we are quite well here. We know how to, or a lot of us know how to deliver, training in an active way, in a way that really engages people. There are some additional levers here, which are kind of quick win levers, like transfer planning. So we know, for example, if people leave the training with a concrete idea, concrete plan of their very next baby steps, then we can double or even triple transfer success rates. So this is really a quick win idea. This is the second part, trainee training design. And the third area is the organization. And here, of course, it is not meant the organization of the training program itself, but the company where the participants are working. And to be very, very open, this was the part that I've overseen for a really, really long time. So the influence of the organization where our participants go back when they leave our training rooms has such a huge influence. And we really need to focus on that as well. So these are the three areas. And within these three areas, as I said, we have those 12 little easy levers. And I really like to stress that, because maybe that's one of the biggest transfer secrets. Make it easy for people.
Yes. Yes. And most of them really aren't that difficult. As you say, you know, at the end of a program, or even as you go through a program, you know, you can be saying to people, so what are you planning to do, you know, the minute you get back to work? And I think, you know, for me, the organizational levers around who is going to help you with that, you know, and that might be a manager, it might be a mentor, it could be a peer, you know, that kind of social learning element, I think is it's so underlooked and undervalued.
Exactly. Although we keep talking about this about learning is a social process. We keep using that term again and again, but somehow we don't live up to it. As we know, all of our participants live and work in an organizational surrounding. So of course we need to focus on that as well. And then the huge question, of course, always is, okay, but how can we make that happen? And I think that's the difficult part behind this whole transfer research bulk, because they share a lot of these phrases. But what we in practice need are little tools that we can easily implement. That's the magic behind it. Again, making it easy also for L&D professionals and professionals and training facilitators to make transfer work. So this is really why we learned the last several years to focus on the small, easy tools.
Excuse this interruption. At Stella Labs, we help you build business critical skills, not just knowledge. Add the missing pieces to your learning journeys to take people from knowing to doing. Want to know more? Visit stellalabs.eu to learn more. Now, back to the episode. It's interesting. I was at a different conference recently, mm-hmm. and the idea of scaffolding came up. And what they were talking about was simple tools that managers can use in meetings, for example, to have effective meetings. And that's one of the things we want to do in terms of, you know, it's very well known that if your manager supports you when you are on a training journey, on a learning journey, if your manager supports you, that will really, really help you to transfer stuff into work. And I think one of the challenges we might have is a lot of people don't like feedback, particularly neither giving nor receiving. So we've switched to using feed forward as a something we teach people, so that it's a much more positive, constructive, forward future thing than thinking about feedback, which is always feels a little bit conflicting and a little bit kind of, you know, you got something wrong. But also I think, you know, sometimes people just don't necessarily know perhaps the right questions to ask. You know, if somebody comes back from a training program, or, you know, they're back from a particular module, you know, what are the right questions to ask? So this is one of the things we want to do in our platform we're building, where we just prompt managers, you know, when is a really good time to ask that question? So what are the kind of critical moments? But also, you know, just here's some simple questions to ask. It's not complicated. And that's not to say that managers don't know, but often, you know, they're so squashed with other things they have to do. They're very, very busy people, that if they're just given those useful prompts at the right time, we really think that's going to support the learning transfer into the workplace from that organizational and social level.
Definitely. I fully agree. Really, really interesting idea. I see exactly the same here. So the support from supervisors is one of those 12 levers. And as you said, we know from research that if they support it, it's much easier for participants, of course, to apply what they have learned. And we know from research that already 15 minutes discussion between supervisor and participants actually make a significant difference. That's amazing. But we also learned, as you said, as long as we kind of force supervisors or try to kind of really put pressure on them, we get a lot of resistance, because somehow supervisors sometimes still have this idea that people development is work of the personal development department. So kind of they send them to training and get them back in a repaired way, and they can immediately work. So It's not that they have realized their very, very important role in making this whole process work. And I think there are two things. So on the one hand, we need to make sure that they know how important they are. They are VIPs in terms of making learning work. And the other thing is to make it really easy for them to be transfer supporters, like the tool you said, or for example, I love. We have experimented with several tools like the self-check we have discussed. So sending out little self-check to supervisors before the training starts, saying, okay, your participant will soon be joining us for one of our programs. Please use the self-check attached to find out whether you're already getting the most out of the training program. And then they just do a little self-check. Okay, I've talked with my participant. I have with my employee about what I'm expecting there, or we have scheduled that he or she is going to present his key insights after the training in our Sure Fix or stuff like that. And then they just tick their answers and completely without making it publicly, so completely anonymous, they get a kind of little text which says, okay, you are a role model in terms of making training work, or you are kind of wasting time and money of your employee, of your company and your employee. And that is much more, okay, we are not forcing you to do the work of the personal development. It's just that you are an important role. And this is how you can do it with these little easy steps and ideas. This is really something where we have learned. This is how we can get the supervisors on board, which is, by the way, one of the hardest lever for many of our participants, of our L&D professionals, who say, okay, how can I bring the supervisors on board? I've tried it for years, but it doesn't work. And I think the secret here is little easy helping tools, like the one you stated, or the self-check, or hundreds of others.
Yeah, I think you're so right there. It's just simple things that often make the biggest difference. I've read the Checkbook Manifesto recently, and I don't know if you've read it. You know, it's a really great book in terms of helping people understand how vital those simple checklists can be to saving lives, but certainly to making training. Delivering that return on investment that we're looking for, saving time, money, effort. You know, there's nothing more disappointing than going on a training course and then not having the opportunity to implement something afterwards.
Exactly. Or your peers saying, okay, you've been to a training program, nice, but we are doing things differently here. So you will get normal in maybe 1 or 2 days again. This is just depressing. And I think As a training designer, as a learning journey designer who is really kind of sharing this vision of not only keeping people busy, but really creating an impact for them, we need to focus on these levers, on these factors as well. So what about the social surrounding? What about the organization? What about, do they have the possibility, the opportunity to apply what they've learned? So all that stuff, it's kind of easy to oversee it because we have done training for years and decades in a certain way. So just remember those, okay, 2 days in the seminar room. That's how we normally do it. But I think now really Corona has changed the way we learn in a really fundamental way. And it's a big chance for now rethinking this whole thing and also putting transfer ideas and tools into learner journeys.
And I think that's a really interesting thought there that has provoked another question for me, Ina, which is, you know, there's a lot of conversation at the moment about, you know, learning in the flow of work, unconscious learning, informal learning. And you know, what we've been talking about so far, I guess, is the more formal element, the training course, which I think still has a place for many things. What are your thoughts around using transfer levers in a more informal way?
I think we definitely should start to not only designing this formal learning, but also informal learning, as it is such a huge part to successful learning. So I think we really need to understand, but not only understand and not only talk about it, but to really put into action those effective learning thoughts also for informal stuff. At the moment, we are doing research on this idea, on this issue of socially shared regulation. So what we all know is that we can push ourselves far more if we do things together. think back to our old seminar rooms, it's really, really hard to kind of say, no, I'm not doing the task that is boring and I would love to buy on Amazon while you are doing that task. That just doesn't happen. But if we are in an asynchronous learning situation or even in a virtual learning situation, It's much easier. There are no norms. There is no kind of this positive social pressure, this nudging of, okay, now go through that task. And this is such an interesting issue for me. Okay, how can we make that work when we don't have this kind of pressure that we can put on them? For example, this pressure of being together in a room where you can kind of natural force people much easier compared to loose communities or in an informal way of learning. I think this is a really, really big thing and we need to focus on that much more. Otherwise, that learning doesn't happen that easily as it could happen.
So it's creating that stronger social learning.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah.
I think the other, from my point of view, I think the other point is supporting learners to understand the learning process and helping them also to understand that, these levers they can actually use for themselves in an informal situation. So, if you're learning informally, I think there's something about being aware that you're learning in the first place, which is very important. But then also realizing that, the things you say to yourself, the tasks you set yourself and actually kind of frame it as I'm about to learn something. So actually, I need to think about, well, how am I going to transfer that into the workplace? And perhaps it's bringing a sort of perhaps what is already an unconscious ability, bringing it into consciousness so you can kind of tweak with it, play with it and make it a little bit more. There's something about making it more concrete, I think, that making it more obvious that then makes it easier to apply it consciously. And then eventually it'll slip back into that kind of unconscious skilled behavior. But I think it's something about teaching people. How they learn and giving them these supporting tools.
Exactly. And I think a really important part of this is here to unlearn the way we kind of learned that learning happens in our formal education, because somehow we all think, or a lot of us think, that learning is sitting somewhere consuming knowledge. Still, although we have discussed about that for years, and still I find trainings where there is a facilitator who kind of shares knowledge by sharing a lot of PowerPoint slide and think that's learning. And participants think that is learning as well. And I think we really have to unlearn this thing that we have done for such a long time and think back how we learned when we were little childs, where we really learned huge stuff, and learn from that way of learning.
I was quite surprised at a conference this weekend, last week rather, to hear some people say that when we do things differently, sometimes our people don't like that. They say, no, we just want to sit here and listen. And actually, I've never had that experience. And I think there's something about the way you set training up, the way you set people up to succeed, that I have never had that experience. But there were quite a few people saying, yeah, but, people just want to come and listen. And then they, they don't want to have to do something. And that really surprised me. But, clearly that is a kind of a myth that needs busting. It's something that needs changing, that we can't just learn just by passively absorbing. We aren't learning sponges.
Exactly. But interesting that you come up with it, because I myself sometimes feel, okay, come on, share something interesting with me. I just want to be passive. And when I reflect on that, it just tells me that I'm not really learning.
So, Ina, one of the things that I'm really interested in is whether any of these levers people find more difficult to apply. Do you think there are any of them are more difficult? You said they're easy, and I agree. But are there any that people find a little bit more difficult?
I would say typically these are organizational levers that are kind of hard for them. So bringing supervisors on board is a big thing because a lot of people are kind of depressed here because they have tried it for several years and it hasn't worked. So it's kind of, we cannot do it. And I love to see the after our transfer designer certification program that it's kind of, yeah, it is possible. Wow, now I finally have those little tools with which they work. So maybe that's one of the most difficult ones, together with the transfer expectation in the organization, which is the question, is the company really expecting transfer, really expecting people to apply what they have learned, or do we do training more as a kind of, okay, we have done something. So we have a problem, so we have done training. Yeah, we are not so
tick the box.
Exactly. So that's maybe one of the harder one as well. But there again are really, really easy tools of how to address them. And maybe if you're starting in this whole transfer area, the one I've already shared, that's one of the most favorite ones for newcomers, is transfer planning. So make them plan their very next steps, because that is really easy, really easy. And it has a huge impact already.
And I think particularly when you tie that in with the social, so that you commit in public to what your next step is, and then there's somebody to kind of hold you to account for that. I think that's a really important part of that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other pitfalls that people need to avoid?
Yes. Yes, definitely. A pitfall that that I used to do when I started with this whole transfer thing. So maybe my biggest mistake, and I'm so grateful for it because it was the biggest learning as well, was that I wanted too much at the very beginning. So there are 12 levers. And as you said, it's only 12, but there are 12. So it's still a lot. And at the very beginning, when I had done all this research, I had the idea that we have to address all 12 levers. So in the companies, I set up huge transfer projects where we kind of shared, okay, now we are putting everything to transfer effective, and transfer is a new, really important word here. And we tried to address all 12 levers for several programs. And yeah, it failed. it failed because, yeah, we don't like those huge change projects, and we don't like to that everything gets so difficult, and we have to do so much. And so I wanted much, and I wanted too much from supervisors, from L&D professionals, from participants. So maybe that's the pitfall, doing it in a huge project way. That's something I can really recommend to avoid. what we normally suggest here is to either do what we call a deep approach. So take one training program that is kind of a CEO baby, as we like to call it. So a program which is really important for one of the CEOs, where he or she is really interested that this program creates a difference, and then try to set it up in a transfer effective way by focusing on 12 levers. And what normally happens afterwards is that the CEO says, wow, can you do that? I don't understand what you have done, but can you do the same with the other program as well? And then you as a L&D professional can say, okay, I can do that. Wonderful. You get asked for it. And that's just awesome. Yes. That's kind of the deep approach. And then there is the broad approach as well, which is choose one really, really easy tools, like, for example, the transfer planning. So create a kind of little folder or a kind of task which every trainer uses at the end of every training session, and do it for all training in your company. Start with a really, really easy tool, and then say, wow, that worked wonderful. Why not try another tool? And so tool for tool, you get more of these levers covered without kind of setting up a huge transfer project that frightens everyone.
That's really useful advice. I think everybody can learn from that. Thank you, Ina. What are your sort of latest, because I know you keep on with your research, don't you? What are your kind of latest insights or the things that are perhaps exciting you most at the moment? Mm-hmm.
So beside this whole thing about socially shared regulations, about this creating a sense of community, that's really something that kind of fascinates me. How can we do that in a asynchronous way or in kind of a learning platform. But I know that you have a lot of ideas here because you're building this transfer platform at the moment. what are your modules, your ideas here? Because I think you're...
So, I mean, we're trying to do it from kind of numerous levels. So we're trying to get support from, you know, if subject matter experts are creating programs or supporting learning, you know, how can we help them? How can we help them with the platform to actually be part of a learning journey effectively? Yeah. And that could be anything. It could be, you know, setting up small conversations. It could be them actually actively mentoring individuals. It might be mentoring small groups. Like you, we're very passionate about getting the managers involved, and that's the piece where we really want to support the managers to have those, you know, sort of simple initiatives in place at the right time, so kind of choosing the right time so they're not overwhelmed, and then they have those just really simple checklists to support them. The understanding being that, you know, if you use a checklist a number of times, after a while that becomes a habit, so you don't necessarily need to continue using the checklist. So the checklist manifesto would say you do, but that, you know, that you kind of introduce new behaviors for people. And then again, you know, how can the learners support each other, you know, peer support, so having, you know, useful, not forums where nobody ever goes and visits, but actually really useful conversation pieces, talking to people in the places they're already having those conversations, those work-based conversations, so that they're supporting each other through the program and kind of promoting that kind of peer support. Because I think one of the things with peers is they're usually at a similar level to you, so they're experiencing similar challenges, similar experiences, and you can talk about it at the same level. The disadvantage if you're working with somebody who's already, you know, 20 steps ahead is they move you along too fast when you're not necessarily quite ready. So that peer support, I think, is hugely important. And I think, you know, peer reviewing output from the actions you take is a really valuable way to do it. You know, it could be that you go and watch somebody in a meeting and then give them some feed forward, or it might be that you know they've produced a report as a result of something, and that you can actually peer review that, and that allows both parties to learn from each other.
Definitely I think that will make the huge next difference between what is a well-designed learning platform and what is just a kind of a content library. These are two completely different things, and I think everyone who thinks about working with a learning platform needs to ask themselves, okay, does it really have this idea of transfer mind? Does it have the levers in place? Does it use, this is another thing we love to do research on at the moment, does it use all the stuff we know from the behavioral sciences? So does it include the bias in a profitable way? So not only making people avoid falling into these biases, but making use of it. This is such an important thing, and I think this will make the difference of a successful learning platform compared with a content library, as we have hundreds and thousands of it.
there's no shortage of some great content, but there is currently no shortage of content. There's plenty of that, and how do we make best use of that knowledge, which is definitely, you know, needed for learning, but actually how do we then support people to do something with that knowledge?
Exactly.
Ina, I think we've come to the end of our podcast. It's been a delight, as always, to talk to you. I think you know, we have that shared joy of making sure that people do, you know, enjoy learning as well as actually change behaviors, habits, attitudes. Is there anything you want to sort of add as a final piece?
I would love to see many, many more L&D professionals out there who share this vision, as you said, this vision and this passion for creating really, really effective learning. And it is not rocket science. It is definitely possible. And I invite everyone to kind of share this this movement and this vision, because it just makes our work feel more useful, more meaningful.
So there's a real advantage for us as L&D people to feel like we really have a real purpose. And I know there are people, questioning their purpose. So I think it does give us real purpose, because we're creating change. Ina, it was, as always, a delight to talk to you. Thank you so much for being part of our podcast at Stella Labs. And I look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you so much. Good luck. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mind the Skills Gap. If you liked it, hit subscribe. You can follow me, Stella Collins, on LinkedIn and find out more about how Stella Labs is tackling the skills gap at stellalabs.eu.